So our reflective dialogue is considering these questions. When I hear this story, I hear God calling us as members of the kingdom of God. Are there themes or truths that could be affirmed or paradoxes lifted up or lessons emphasized? What are faithful communal Christian practices that bring God's healing tenderness to this story? So I invite anyone to begin at any point, just what stood out to you, what responses came to you?
I will start by saying racism and systems of oppression should be dismantled. Marginalized people should be lifted up. Color should not be a reason to oppress an individual.
What I saw in this story was an affirmation of our being equal in God's eyes and acknowledging the fact that the values and the principles that we've inherited from our ancestors were based on the struggle for liberation. And that we have a moral obligation to follow through, but there's also an expected obligation or an expected behavior that we would question why we would be denied those privileges. And the one thing that we've learned is that if we stay the course, then we're following in our ancestors' steps who fought and died for our right to have choice and have more options.
Yeah, for me, I almost saw this as a technique for inoculating our young folks and even adults. And one place in my notes, I said, what a powerful triumvirate is God, family, and community for a child. You know, it's like we can't control how the world is going to treat our people. I mean, we're going to be fighting it, but at the end of the day, we need to prep our people so that they can withstand the blunt blows that our world is going to deliver. And that's kind of what I really got out of this story is that those kids, they had a wonderful support system. And the lesson for me is that our churches need to be that kind of support system for kids, and not just kids. I say children because the story was about a young person, but I just feel like inoculating our people so that they can move through the mess and not be stopped, so to speak.
And I would agree that while we cannot be the formulators of the world, in a sense we can responsibility for our liberation. And I think to that extent, I think that is what God expects from us. Um, And I also think that if we do not challenge, as Kenneth put it, racism, structural racism, we don't challenge those institutions, then we're letting our parents down. We're letting their parents down, because that was the fight that got them to this point. There was a time when we didn't even have an option to decide on a school. So to make the choice, I think, is courageous, similar to what our young folks did in Arkansas and in Cleveland and so many other cities, where there was an attempt to deny the right to an equal education. And I would also agree that that shows a family value that I believe the church can regenerate and re-energize, fighting in unity for several generations. And I think that was one of the things that was in the Juana Bordas reading, the indigenous people in the United States would look seven generations ahead. And so there was a path to follow. And I think that is in line with God's desire for us to live free, free from racism, free from sexism, free from misogyny, free from those isms that have kept us handcuffed.
Well, my reflection was basically all of these systems, in this particular case, the education system was another example of how Black people, or how the systems are not set up for Black people, and Black people have to continue to navigate and fight for resources that these systems hold, withhold from us to prevent us from thriving. I also saw the hope in it, because the scriptures and the church has always been a guiding star for us to sort of overcome every obstacle. When we put our trust in God, that we're strengthened in ways that the world has attempted to weaken us, natural strength to overcome adversity. So I'm thankful for the scriptures and the hope that we see in the story as well.
I would just continue to add that, as you all have said, but I would add specifically, people, places, and safe spaces promote liberation from oppressive mindsets. So we have to make sure that we're surrounded by good people who want to see you succeed, because these girls could have easily been demoralized to a point to where they did not want to continue on, but they were surrounded by good people, places, churches, homes, and they were safe spaces where they were still allowed to flourish, that their minds were not tainted by these oppressive systems that sought to, again, keep them down. And so that's why it's so important, as we journey, to understand that, yes, the church is powerful, but also people, liberated people, should also be seeking to liberate people. We can not continue to let these systems of historical oppression exist. We must begin to work, continue to work, and tear them down, because if they're going to continue to exist, there's a vicious cycle that we will continue to be in, and we'll be having this story, this conversation 100 years from now. So therefore, work must continue to ensure that no matter who you are, no matter what your color, your race, religion, you should be allowed to attend whatever school you want and succeed because of what's in you and be who God has called you to be.
And I want to name the action behind it too, because I noticed where I left off. I never liked to in their story, they could have simply like, well, I'm just gonna pray about it. As my kids will say, they like, I'm gonna give it over to God. But it was their faith that the guidance to continue to act. And so I think even as we're thinking, like just like my reflection over it as well, is just that the faith mixed with our actions and our words and our doing is what pushes us to overcome the obstacles. So the blessing and the rise didn't come just by leaving the prayer and the scriptures at the altar.
You can end the recording, Dwayne.